Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Unheard News. I'm Freddie Sayers. Every day, more and more information emerges as to what the government and authorities were up to during the COVID-19 pandemic. We can't cover it all, but sometimes something comes out that is so surprising, we feel we need to spend some time on it. A report that emerged over the weekend by the think tank Big Brother Watch has detailed what certain slightly shadowy organisations within the government, things called the Rapid Response Unit, also within the army, something called the 77th Brigade, which we'll get into, were not spending their time worrying about things like infection fatality rates or what the truth of the COVID pandemic was. They were observing social media feeds on Facebook and Twitter, looking for dissenting opinions that might be troublesome and potentially reported up the chain to someone who might censor them. This concerning habit has now come to light, and one person who's come up quite a few times in these lists is the journalist Peter Hitchens. He came out very early in the COVID pandemic as an opponent of lockdowns. In fact, we had him on this show on day 10 of the lockdown back in 2020. He joins us once again now because he finds himself on a list of people who certain organizations within the government were monitoring and reporting, and perhaps, it looks like, leading to censorship on social media networks. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
So what have we learned about your involvement in all of this?
What they came up with in my case was that something called, I think, the Rapid Response Unit had been taking a look at what I was doing and reporting it upwards to somewhere or other. Other people, I think, had been caught in by other mechanisms. I think the Cabinet Office and this 77th Brigade of the Army appear to have been involved as well. Now, this in itself is quite small, that the government is looking at what journalists are doing. But then again, why should the government be looking at what journalists are doing? Particularly this kind of thing. All I was doing on the occasion when I was picked up was amplifying articles in our sister paper, the Daily Mail, about doubts about some of the COVID statistics. Now, why should the government be interested in that? To me, in some ways, the most fascinating part of the report is that it's quite clear that the government did have, as major institutions do, a better access to the internet giants than you or I might have. If I wanted to say something to Twitter or Facebook or YouTube, I wouldn't even know where to start. But it certainly appears as if the government were able to communicate with them. Now, put that together with a couple of experiences which I had during the Great Panic, and you begin to wonder what is connected with what. And it's quite beyond doubt, for instance, that I gave an interview, several interviews, to Mike Graham of Talk Radio during the panic. And Mike was initially completely hostile to my position, and I won him round. And we had many discussions on this, which were of a dissenting nature. And YouTube then would put them out, as it did a lot of Talk Radio output. And then one of them appeared on YouTube with 1 minute and, I think, 14 seconds missing completely. And then around about the same time, I did an interview with the trigonometry people, Konstantin Kirsin and his companion. And we'd done one before in which I talked to them, and it had been a great success, and they'd got a very good audience out of it. And they came to me after doing this one on the COVID issue, and they said, "It's extraordinary. And we put it out in the normal fashion, and even we can't find it when we search for it on the net. And the level of interest and take-up is far, far smaller than we would have expected, or than should normally be the case." And it seemed to be that there had been something called shadow banning going on. Now, you probably know what this phrase means, and maybe a lot of your viewers and readers do too, but just to explain, it's a form of, how shall I put it, very soft censorship in which nothing is actually done to prevent people from finding what you've done, but it just becomes difficult in a way which you can't yourself detect or see. I think this is very strong circumstantial evidence of shadow banning in two cases of which I know for certain. There may have been many others, I simply can't tell and don't know. And if it's the case that the government can contact organisations, the big media organisations, which are capable of doing shadow banning, we have in place a system by which a government could, and I'm going to go no further than this because I do very much prefer to stick to known facts, we have circumstances in which a government could, if it wished, arrange for the shadow banning of opinions it didn't like. Now, that seems to be a complete outrage against the principles of freedom of speech in a free society, and one which we should be very worried about. The other thing about the report which the Mail on Sunday carried yesterday is that we had a whistleblower from the 77th Brigade very much saying that he didn't think he'd join the army to do the sort of thing he'd been asked to do. It's well worth reading. It's in some ways the most powerful thing in the whole exposure. But it really isn't the job of government to decide what views should get most exposure, is it?
Let's just lay out the components we can be confident about then. So we know that within government there are these units. There's one called the Counter Disinformation Unit, another called the Rapid Response Unit, which sounds like kind of something out of one of those TV programs, but apparently they are real, and they are monitoring, I suppose, what they would call misinformation and trying to put out better information. That's how they would justify it. These were the ones that came across your posts and flagged them in some way. We know that for sure.
We know that, yeah.
And then this strange army unit, let's just take a moment to dwell on that. So this is something called the 77th Brigade, and their mandate is apparently non-lethal engagement and legitimate non-military levers being used as a means to adapt behaviours of adversaries. That has a slightly sort of nudge ring to it, doesn't it?
I'm not. I think its existence has been known to the informed for a very long time. And again, in modern warfare, there is a lot of information warfare. In any country which doesn't have defences against that is being very foolish. So I wouldn't be against the existence of such a unit if it was actually working on the disruption of and the combating of disinformation by this country's enemies or potential enemies. What's wrong with that? But if it turns to internal monitoring, that's a wholly different matter. And it seems to me to be a suggestion that it has been turning that way.
If it's focusing on our enemies or competitors, that'd be one thing. But focusing on our own population and journalists within it starts to feel a little bit uneasy. And then, as you say, there's the kind of social media side of this, which we also have very clear information about, not only what's come out of America with what we now know happened at Twitter, but we know that shadow banning, as you call it, is a real phenomenon. All of the major networks have the ability to do that. And certainly that was used during the COVID pandemic. I almost think you're being charitable by saying that those two branches were, we don't know if they were in touch. I think probably there are on record statements by people in the government saying that we're in regular contact with the social media networks, but...
Yes, but there's always the one step further, isn't there? Being in touch is one thing. Again, you could find legitimate reasons for them being in touch, I suppose. And I struggle to do so, but I'm not going to say there are none. But I don't know, for instance, that Mr. X or Ms. X from some government department called, for example, YouTube and said, can we please shadow ban this item? Because I don't know that. And I don't know how I could ever know it unless we got an amazing breakthrough in internal information. I do think it's very important in these things not to give ammunition to those who would like to laugh at it and say that these are just hysterical claims. We should be very modest in what we claim and say, nonetheless, even though what we're claiming is modest, it is extremely alarming. Governments should not be monitoring opinion. It's none of the government's business if people disagree with it. In fact, a sensible, wise government, heaven forfend that I should ever be in government, if I were, I would consider myself a complete traitor to my country if I engaged in suppressing or in any way preventing the expression of opinions which opposed what I was doing. And I was brought up on Milton and Areopagitica, and the truth was never put to the worse in a fair fight. And as far as I'm concerned, you have to have fair fights and debate about policy, the more important the policy is, the more open it has to be to debate. And I think that this has been forgotten. And I traced this back in my article in the Mail on Sunday yesterday to a particular moment in our modern history, which is the New Labour Manifesto of 1997, in which Anthony Blair himself said, and made an amazing claim in the introduction, the New Labour is the political arm of the British people as a whole, thereby basically saying that the government spoke for everybody, which also, of course, means that everybody is part of the government. It's a sort of Hobbesian arrangement whereby there isn't really any room for one of the basic principles of modern British government, which is that you have an adversarial opposition which is recognised to exist and to need to exist, and that there is always, always adversarial debate about every policy. I think that was the moment that it began to change. And rapid response, remember, was very much the technique of the New Labour spin machine during its really successful years in the early part of the Blair period. And so you are getting basically Blairites' news management techniques being taken on by a government. Now, it's all political parties can do this if they like. That's to some extent what they're for. But when government does it, it's entirely different. And you mustn't expect the freedoms of a long free country to be taken away suddenly, for tanks to come rumbling down Whitehall and military music to be played on the radio. It's not going to happen like that. It will happen in ways like this. Little, faintly concerning, half-exposed things of which we know very little. I think we should worry about this very much because it is so, actually partly because it is so apparently insignificant. It's the salami slicing of freedom. And the whole point of salami slicing is each slice is so small that nobody will worry about it. By the time you finish slicing, you've got the whole sausage.
Do you think also there's this concept of the state of emergency or the state of exception? We did an interview with the philosopher Matthew Crawford the other week who was talking about this.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at UH1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mechanism by which formally liberal or formally properly democratic governments start creeping into this kind of authoritarianism is always under a cover of using terms like war against, and that justifies, you know, setting aside civil liberties and going onto a war footing, which accidentally sticks around. Do you think that's what happened during COVID?
Oh, I think undoubtedly. I think once you have any policy where you're claiming the population or the nation are in danger, then you've given yourself a justification to behave much more authoritatively and much more ruthlessly than you would if that danger didn't exist. Now, it is possible, is it not, that people who want to take on certain powers might exaggerate the danger in which you find ourselves. Again, I found during the New Labour era, you and I are doubtless as perturbed about terrorism as anybody else, and I hate it like poison. But I did not think that it was a pretext for undermining habeas corpus or the general rules of evidence. and all the other things which the new Labour government did on the pretext of our being in a war against terror. But whenever you want to do things you oughtn't to do, that's why you do them. And there's an old Whitehall saying, which you'll doubtless have heard, never let a good crisis go to waste. If you've got a crisis, it's a wonderful opportunity to use it as the pretext to do things you've longed to do anyway. And as far as I'm concerned, the government of this country is basically Henry VII's Court of Star Chamber and High Commission, trying to get back all the powers that have been taken away from it in the past several hundred years of reform and liberation. And it's always doing it. It's like bindweed. If you don't constantly keep an eye on it and cut it back, it will get back all the authority it wants. And at the moment, it's getting back an awful lot.
Here's the paradox, which perhaps you can explain to me, which is that it's the people who consider themselves liberal Democrats in some sense, the people who are most opposed to populist parties, who really think of themselves as the grown-ups in the room, the sensible people, who for the past years have been pushing forward with most vigour towards some of these suspensions of the principles of liberal democracy. It's a kind of paradox, isn't it?
It is a paradox that a crusty old reactionary like me should be the voice of liberty against the authoritarian liberals. But it has indeed happened, and I think it's happened, as so many other bizarre things have happened, because the liberals are now themselves in power. They weren't bad defenders of liberty when they were out of power. The Guardian, for instance, used to be a very vigilant newspaper about infringements of liberty and government abuse of power. Now it isn't, and the reason that it isn't is because its friends are in power. And that's why that's changed. It's also the reason why liberals are stamping around the country being warmongers, because the wars which are being fought are liberal wars, not conservative wars. And so it's left to what remains of the conservative movement to stand up against this. And you'll find an awful lot of the opposition to this comes either from the outcast left, the sort of Corbynite left, which has been chucked overboard by the Labour Party, or from people such as me on what remains of the conservative right. But the great liberal consensus, which stretches across so much of society and calls itself centre-left or centre-right, on the assumption that everything that it happens to agree with is the centre, they're not interested terribly, and they're perfectly happy to see this go in. And we saw this during COVID, and we see it now during the Ukraine war. There is no dissent permitted against the Ukraine war. If you dissent against it, you're abused. I'm called daily a Putin apologist and a war crimes denier and all kinds of other stupid slanders, because I simply say I don't think this policy is very sensible. It's a liberal war. Again, it's a war of the modern left, which is completely different from the old left because it's got so much power.
So that's interesting. You think the same kind of patterns are now coming in on the Ukraine issue as we saw over COVID, where dissent from the policy is somehow being cast as immoral or dangerous and must be sort of stamped down.
If you're experiencing it as I am, it's almost identical. The same thing that I was told during COVID, the things I said were leading to the deaths of people. Sometimes it was actually claimed to I directly helped to cause the deaths of some tragic individuals. I was called a COVID denier, which is an absurd thing to be called. No one denied the thing existed, and all kinds of other rude names. And now, if you raise the question of is the policy of pursuing a long war against Russia, which is basically the one we're doing now, of escalating the war by sending more weapons into it, is that mistaken? You're accused of being in favour of a Russian victory, which is an absurd jump of about 1,000 miles from one position to another, but which works in public debate most of the time because you don't hear the other side. Remember, perhaps you don't remember, I do, being tremendously old, Vietnam, even Suez, country divided hugely on big foreign policy issues, and it was perfectly legitimate. Major opposition figures speaking out openly against it. In the end, even the British government saying, no, we're not going to support the United States war effort in Vietnam, and getting a lot of support from the left in Britain and a lot of disapproval from the right, which wanted to go in with the Americans. But it was a debate, not necessarily totally even-handed, but it was thought legitimate to have different views on it. Now, there's one view, and if you don't hold that, you're a bad person. I speak as that bad person.
So where is the anti-war left or right now? I mean, it's yourself, it's a few kind of technology overlords in Silicon Valley who seem... We had David Sacks on this show who takes a different view, but, yeah, the voices are very few and far between.
Well, they're there. I mean, it's interesting. There's the RAND Corporation, of all people, which is normally associated with sort of ultra-hawkish positions in the American Foreign Policy has just produced a report saying that maybe a long war over Ukraine is not a good idea. Interesting, it hasn't received much publicity. I only found out about it by accident. But it's there, and I think you'll find that in several of the continental countries, opinion among certain parts of society is very much sceptical.
Like France, for example.
Well, you notice that I think General de Gaulle's grandson was reported today to have spoken out quite firmly against it in ways which I think nobody of his standing would dare to do in this country. Also, I have a feeling that the United States being what it is, there are probably more voices against it simply on the old grounds of why is the United States getting into this expensive and dangerous foreign entanglement than there are in this country, which has always, or certainly for the past couple of hundred years, while it's been an island nation believing itself to be protected by deep salt water and a strong navy, has thought that that getting involved in wars abroad was quite rewarding and something to do. Wars are popular in this country in a way that they aren't in many others. It's interesting to see how if you call for war and give it some kind of moral purpose, a lot of people in this country whose equivalents in continental Europe would think twice about it are quite keen on it. So there's that too going on.
So do you think then, just to be clear as to your position, speaking now, you think it was a mistake to send British tanks? Was it a mistake for us to pressurise the Germans to send their tanks? And I'm guessing you'd be against sending jets and Typhoons.
Once you've embarked on a policy of pursuing a long war in Ukraine, and remember, Leon Panetta, who has been in his time defence secretary, chief of staff at the White House, and head of the CIA, has said quite openly this is actually a proxy war between the United States and Russia. Ukraine is the battleground on which it's taking place. Once you've decided that you want that sort of war, then you're going to have to send more weapons into it. My view is that I don't see from the point of view of British patriotism or British interests of any kind what our interests are in a long war between the United States and Russia and why we should be taking sides on it. Other people in other countries may have different views of this and are entitled to have them. But speaking as a British patriot concerned for the future of this country and its health, welfare and security, I don't see this as a wise or intelligent policy, and I therefore I wish to oppose it. So it's simply a matter of I'm against tanks. What I'm in favour of is of the powerful nations of the world trying to achieve peace talks so that this is brought to an end. All wars end. This is the point the RAND Corporation report makes, and I recommend to you, it's quite thoughtful. All wars end. It's the question of how they end and how long it takes to end them. In my view, they could all end more quickly, pretty much, if people were more sensible. The First World War, which was the root of almost all modern evil, could have been ended in early 1917. Several of the nations involved were in some ways quite keen to do so, but politically it was difficult for them to do so because they whipped up so much support among their own populations for it that it was hard. And because of the delay in ending it, we got the Russian Revolution, we got Lenin, so we got Stalin, and in my view, we got Hitler as well. And if as Aldous Huxley points out in his preface to Brave New World, this was one of the most disastrous mistakes in human history. I think that we could be in danger of repeating it.
Do you feel like your politics have changed over the past 3 years, do you think?
Well, my politics always change because the facts always change. But I underwent fundamental shift in politics many years ago. And I haven't diverted from that.
Do you have more sympathy for the libertarians than you did 3.5 years ago?
I don't. Libertarianism is an absurdity. You can't make liberty into principle. Liberties conflict with each other. So no, I will align myself on many occasions with people who are standing up for liberty on particular matters, and I will find myself in alliance with some very odd and unexpected people, and I've no doubt they find me an unexpected ally as well. But the basic liberties of freedom of speech, thought, and assembly, and of course of the press, are ones which are not negotiable for me, and I feel them more and more under threat, and I will work with almost any, there are some exceptions, but almost any ally to preserve them.
Peter Hitchens, thanks for your time today.
My pleasure.
That was journalist Peter Hitchens, who, as of 2 or 3 days ago, we now know, was not only being monitored by agencies within the government, he was actually shadow banned or soft censored by networks, including this one, that is YouTube. he drew what is, I think, a little bit of a chilling comparison between the conversation now about Ukraine and what he observed over COVID. Thanks to him, and thanks to you for tuning in. This was Unheard.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.